All right, guys, welcome back to the Game Trail Podcast. I have a special guest today, which I'm super excited to talk to. I have a bunch of bow hunting buddies and a bunch of friends that like some target archery and stuff, and so I let these guys know that Paige was going to be on the podcast today, and I reached out and said, hey, do you guys have questions for Paige? All of them have questions. I kind of filtered them through and found the ones that I like the best, but I appreciate Paige Pierce jumping on today. I've been trying to catch up with you for a few weeks.
Yeah, the scheduling is always hard, especially this time of the year, but I'm glad we made it work.
Does it get easier at any time, or is it just
harder?
The way it is right now? Harder.
No, because when you first do it, you're like, this is new and exciting and so cool. And then every year you're like, again, really? Yeah. Okay. So no, it doesn't get easier. And all these tournaments just keep adding more and more. Like the organizations add more and more tournaments. And so the years just get longer and longer and longer. So, yeah.
How many weekends a month or not a month, but a year do you think you are competing?
I mean, from like the pro level standpoint, I usually do anywhere from 25 to 30, like either national or world level events each season. And then there's a ton of other tournaments that I'll shoot as well. Like I was just in Montana shooting the Montana Open. Like I wouldn't count that one. This weekend I'm shooting one in Roseville. That one doesn't count. So I'm shooting probably most all of the weekends. But from like the pro level standpoint, 25 to 30-ish, which is way more. Like most people do like 10, and that's a lot, you know, for them. And so it keeps me busy.
Do you have like local shoots that you roll into and there's like an audible like, oh shit, that kind of rolls over everybody and they're like, yeah, because I know like locally here in Cedar City where I'm from, we used to have the big Color Country shootout and we had decent money that we would put up for it and we would get, you know, maybe 300 to 500 shooters. But every year it was like, oh shit, there's Kyle or there's Tim or Wilkie, like those guys that all roll in. And you're like, well, there went that.
You know, I'm pretty blessed to live in an area with a lot of really good shooters. And so we joke about this often, but like the bad ones here are like would be good ones in a lot of other places. Right. And so shooting the Redding style stuff, I think it makes you better, whether you want to be or not. Like if you can shoot consistent out to 100 yards and run sight tapes and shoot uphill, downhill, side hill, like all the things, it makes you better. And so we have such a cool group of people here that it's not really like that. I mean, maybe they feel that way. I don't know. I don't think that, but we're all friends. Like we're all close. We all grew up shooting together and I miss that. Honestly, like I wish I could shoot the local stuff more. I was just looking right before we got on and I saw our first outlaw and I was like, oh, it's over NFA indoor nationals. Like that sucks. I can't go. And so there's so many times where I wish I could go shoot the local stuff and be part of that because it's such a cool community in my area. And unfortunately, my schedule's so busy, I've kind of missed most of those now. But whenever I semi-retire, I'll go back and do all those.
It's probably a little less pressure too, right? You can go and just have a good time, just kind of hang out with some buddies and shoot
I think arrows. I think it's the opposite.
Really?
It's way worse because when you go shoot at the pro stuff, like you're going to win some, you're going to lose some. Like everybody's good, whatever. It is what it is. But when you go home, when you roll into a local shoot, a lot of the times that's where we'll do like under the table testing or like test a new bow for the first time and stuff because no one's really watching. But then it's like that weird awkward of like, oh, I beat her. Like she's not that good because I beat her here. And so I actually feel more pressure at the local stuff than I do at the big stuff because it's like, okay, it's weird if you like go home and then you lose local stuff, but then here you're going and like doing whatever on the national or world circuit or whatever. And so it depends on who I'm shooting with, obviously, but there's always that little bit of element there that I don't love.
Yeah, the local hero shows up and they're gonna stick it to the pro, I'm sure.
Yeah, but it's cool. Like we have so many good shooters here that like Taylor Spoolstra, like he's gonna be at some of the local stuff and he just made the shoot off and shot I think one of the highest X counts this last weekend, and he would be what I would call like a local guy. And like we really do have some good shooters around here.
Yeah, that's good. Well, like I said, I appreciate you jumping on. I'm not going to belabor you with like having you recount, you know, where you're from and your entire upbringing up through archery.
That's nice. Thank you. That story gets repetitive. You can find that anywhere.
Yeah. When I've done people's podcasts before, I'm like, well, there's like probably 10 or 15 other ones of these out here where you can find out that kind of information. So one thing I did want to ask you, though, is like you came up through archery. I was looking at your profile page on your Insight program, like your About You page, right? And I was looking through that today, and it said you started shooting at like 18 months, and then you started competing, I think, like by 10, and then you set like a state
record. No, I was competing at 18 months.
Okay.
Like shooting the Redding style stuff. I just didn't start traveling out around the country until like 10. Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. Yeah. So this question I would think that it's probably going to be, you know, the one answer, but I was curious as to like, was there a moment along that way where you were like, yeah, this could be a thing. Like I'm really good at this. Or was it just like a transition of like, hey, I'm getting better and better and better. And I'm just, this is what I do.
When I was 10, this is where that was kind of mentioned on there. Mm-hmm. I broke a state record. We didn't even know there were records. And so that came in the mail. My mom was like, well, that's cool. Like, what's that? So then we started Googling records. That's how we found USA Archery. And then she's like, we should go shoot one of those. And I went to that USA Archery state shoot that wasn't that far off at that time and shot the tournament, won, broke all 5 or 6 records, whatever there were at that time for my age category. And there were like all these coaches and people that I did not know, because it was like a totally different archery community than the one I was just referencing. Right. And they're like swarming me and like, do you have a coach? And like, who's your coach? And do you want to work with me and be on this team and do this? And I'm like, what is this? And so, yeah, that was like a weird moment. And then they were like, go to nationals. Like you might do good. And so we did. And we drove to nationals and I broke like 16 national records there and won. And it was kind of like, that was the game changer of like, right. I was always good local. I shot California, Nevada, Oregon, Washington. Like we traveled all around in our area, but it wasn't like a national circuit type thing. Right. And so that was when I first started that. People were like, who are you? I'm like, where did you come from? Cause it's a whole different tournament style. And so that was kind of the moment of like, okay, I think I'm actually better at this than I realize.
As a kid, that must have felt pretty incredible, right? And like, and I know that archery talk a lot about confidence. You know, everybody does. Is confidence is everything, right? There you go,
tattooed right there.
You got the tattoo, but I mean, as a kid, that must have felt pretty incredible, right? To have people come up to you and say, "Hey, you know, who are you? What do you do? You know, you should do this. You should do that."
It was weird.
Like, it probably just compounded, right? Year over year.
Yeah, the difference for me is that when I was a kid, like the women who were doing archery, you didn't really make a living. And so like, I didn't grow up like the kids are now watching the pros going, this could be a job or like a career for me, because there wasn't the money in it, especially not on the women's side. That was not a thing. And so I knew I wanted to shoot and I'm competitive and I like to be the best at whatever I'm doing, whatever that is. I don't even care if it's folding laundry. I want to do it faster than you, you know, like whatever. And so, it was kind of different because I grew up in the generation now that kind of changed that to where like young girls can, or guys can, watch and be like, I could do this. And like, I could shoot pro and I could make a living and make it make sense. That didn't used to be a thing. So I feel like our effort that I put in coming up was different, because it was like, yeah, I want to do this, but it was never going to be a job. Like I went to college and I did all the other things thinking that's going to be my job, my career. Like I didn't actually think this was going to be that until all of a sudden it was.
Yeah.
So I think that's different. Like watching the people come up now, they're getting better, younger. And I was like, well, yeah, if I had the motivation of you can go win money and actually do this and get real sponsorships and things, I probably would have too. It just wasn't the reality when I was a kid. So it's changed a lot and for the better, which is really cool.
Right. No, that's neat. I think it's cool. I've got 3 kids myself and, you know, various stages. I got a 20-year-old and a 16 and a 12-year-old, and they do different activities, but yeah, I'm always kind of like, what is the trigger turner? You know, like what makes the biggest difference in taking them from here to here?
Yeah.
And so as a parent, you're trying to mentor them and, you know, think of the right things to say and the right coaching. And I was just curious. So I wanted to ask that. I know a few professional archers, so I've had a chance to talk. Kyle's a friend of mine, I would say. So I've talked to Kyle. One question, and it's going to be a bit of a loaded question, and I don't even know, it's so broad that I'm not even sure you can answer it, but I want you to take a stab at it, if you will.
I'll try.
Okay. I just want to know, how do you get better? Like this is coming from my perspective of, I've been shooting a bow for about 25, 26 years at this point, and there were points where I was progressing And I got to a point where I felt like I've just kind of plateaued. I still shoot the same number of arrows. In fact, I probably shoot more arrows now than I ever did before. Shoot pretty much every single day, right? But I kind of plateaued. It's just like I never got any better. I'm pretty consistent. But like, how does somebody actually get better at archery?
Your mind. You think that's not a hard question. That's a pretty simple question. Yeah. That is the only piece where there's no glass ceiling. Your mind can grow and improve every single day of your life. So when I teach seminars, like we start with the basics and we build up, right? What's the basics? Form. Well, here's the issue. Everyone always thinks it's about my form, 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 form. And like coaches really love to hound that too. Mm-hmm. Your subconscious mind after about 30 days is going to take your form, whether it's great or crappy, and you're going to do it the same every single time. Like that's just is how we work. Our body works on patterns and repetition. And so what's funny is people will shoot and then they just go shoot more and more and more arrows. And it's like, why am I not getting better? Well, your form is already consistent. That is only going to carry you so far. And so once you kind of have that down, which after the time you've shot, you do, right? Shooting more arrows isn't what's going to fix you. There's two things. Really learning your equipment, learning how to fine tune and really push the boundaries with that to get the most out of your setup. Because most people are missing that mark. Like there's always room to be improved upon there. But once you tap that out, it's like, now what? Like, I know I've done everything I can on this setup. I'm shooting all the arrows, but I still want to be better. That's where the mind taps in. Because 9 times out of 10, when you underperform at something, it's like, oh, I choked, or oh, I got nervous, or oh, it was so good until it wasn't. And I was shooting so great, and then my freaking big bull was there, and moment of truth, I screwed it up. Like, that is where the mind comes in, and that's the difference. And so that's not really talked about on the hunting side, right? Like, everyone knows the term buck fever. Everybody, you know, has experienced something like that at some point in their life if they've bow hunted. But even on the target archery side, like the mental stuff isn't talked about as much. If you go look at other pro sports, like you go look at any other pro sports or Olympic sports, the thing that I just launched, we'll talk about later, like everyone's doing that. That's not new. It's not new science. Like it's a very known thing. It's just not known in archery. But so much of bow hunting has to do with how you handle the pressure and what you do in that moment of truth. Mm-hmm. And like, how are you really training for that? And like, what are you doing to really work on your mind so that way it helps you succeed in those moments instead of holds you back? Right. So of course you need to shoot. Like I always tell people, new bow hunters, I'm like, go to those local tournaments. Like in my area, you go shoot a Redding style tournament. You're shooting from 0 to 100 yards essentially. And in between distances, like how many people practice 37 and 42 and 54 and like, they probably don't. Uphill, downhill, sidehill. Like, how are you going to perform in the field without practicing that? So the tournaments will really like open you to all of the other skill technical things that you need to learn. Mm-hmm. You know, learning your equipment, you learn so much more on the target side. I just carry that over to the hunting side. So it makes my hunting stuff better. Like I've never learned much from the hunting side that I've carried to target because it's not as technical. But it definitely works the other way around. And then the mental stuff, I learned more from the target side and then carried that over to hunting. Again, I wouldn't have learned that if all I did was bow hunt. So I'm kind of hoping to like bring some of that to the bow hunters to help them as well, because no one's doing that for them.
Right. I have a bunch of other questions for you, but since you, I think what I'm going to do, what I want to do is I want to jump to your program. So Insight, right? Which is your new program that you've got. We'll jump to it and then we'll go back to some of these other ones, maybe towards the tail end. But Let me, I'm actually a little, I'm a skeptic by nature. So generally I'm a skeptic. Like you tell me it's black, I'm like, I don't know. You know, I want to think about it. Mm-hmm. Right. So,
yeah.
So I'm curious. So for me, I've always thought like I aimed decently, right? I felt like my lack of improvement was a lot in my back half. So in my execution here, right. Form pretty decent. But I've often thought like, yeah, my execution's the thing, but do you think, I'm curious that you said pure mental. Like, do you think that like anybody's given, like wherever they're at, you know, myself included with the shot execution I have been shooting for as long as I have, do you think that I could make massive improvements just based on pure mental?
Yeah, 100%. You have to have heard people say like, once you learn archery, it's 90% mental and 10% physical.
Oh, I've heard them say it. Again, like, I'm like, really?
It is. Well, how many people can shoot a bow in their backyard and probably go shoot the same scores as the pros, but then you throw those same people out on the line and it looks like they've never shot a bow before. Like, right. That's mental. That isn't their actual shooting ability. Mm. And so most of the people, even at the top level, especially starting out, but even at the very top level, like there's always still mental things that need to be improved upon. And so like you just said it, it's your execution. Okay. Like that's fine. But what is it in your execution? Usually it's like you could yell at yourself and say, push, push, pull, pull, roll, roll, whatever that is. Essentially, it's a weak spot in your subconscious process. So there's two parts of your brain. We've got our conscious mind and our subconscious mind. Mm-hmm. Conscious is what we think with. Okay. Like, oh, I had a meeting at 2 o'clock. I had to remember, right? Like those type things. What am I going to have for lunch? That's my conscious mind. Your subconscious mind makes up who you are as a person. And so that is like, even breathing is subconscious. You don't think, oh, breathe and then take a breath. It just happens naturally. They say that we think about like 6 million conscious thoughts in a day, but we run like millions and millions and millions of subconscious processes all day long. When you're driving and you just like space out and you get somewhere and you're like, oh, I kind of spaced. Mm-hmm. That's because it's subconscious. When you first started, it's like 10 and 2, blinker light. Like you have to think about everything. As you do something, it is scientifically proven, nothing through archery, right? You can Google this if you want, that your subconscious mind is going to create those patterns and that repetition. And so that's what archery is. And so it's essentially your subconscious mind running a process. And so the more you do it physically, right, then the quicker and better that process is going to set in. And a lot of people are like, well, prove that to me. And I'm like, okay, if I went and changed your hand grip, mm-hmm. or I changed your front shoulder or something, if you don't consciously think about that change and I'm like watching you, you're going to go right back to your old hand grip. Why? Because your old hand grip is your current subconscious process. Subconscious, right. So to build a new one, you have to consciously focus on whatever that change is for about 30-ish days. And then it gets programmed into part of that subconscious process into a new one. And that becomes your new normal. So now you don't have to think about it. And now you're doing it that way again. So anyone who's ever worked on something through archery, like form or made changes, when I give them that example, they're like, okay, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And when we perform at our best, this is true of bow hunting as well, everything is subconscious. Like if you have to think like, how do I knock the arrow? And like, how do I, like when you first started with a release and you're like all uncoordinated trying to get it on the D-loop, like, no, we don't, you just do it, right? Mm-hmm. Every step of our shot has been built over in that subconscious mind over the repetition of doing it so many times. We don't even have to think about it. You just do it naturally. It just happens. When you shoot your best at archery, it's when it's subconscious. So the issue is, what happens when you get nervous? Well, your conscious mind gets in the way. Right. And when your conscious mind gets in the way, your heart rate goes up, your breathing gets crazy. Like, how many times have I watched hunting shows and you hear, I'm like, what are they doing? Are they breathing like right into the mic? Like, calm down. But they're excited. Like, that's mm-hmm. their body's natural reaction. And so if I said that through mental training, you could take bow hunters and keep them calm until after they make the shot. Mm-hmm. Is that not going to make them better? Like sure. I still have all of the emotion, but through years of training, I've learned to push that emotion off until it's okay to feel it. I don't get like this and breathe and crazy like I watch on the Hunting Channel every night. Yeah. I don't get like that before I shoot. I've trained to push that off so I'm like at my best in the moments that matter. And then after I shoot, that's when I let the flood of emotion or adrenaline and all that stuff hit me. Those are things that you can accomplish through mental training that you can't do through just shooting hundreds and hundreds of arrows. That's not how it works.
Yeah. Do you think there's mixed messages in kind of in our space about being, you know, quote unquote controlled, or that you have to make the decision, if you will. And that, like, I don't know. I won't call out names, but I'll call out Joel Turner, right? So Joel Turner has his program. He teaches it. Admittedly, I've never taken the full course. I've listened to every podcast he's ever taken or done. And I listen to it and I'm like, yeah, I get what you're saying. But to me, it just like doesn't resonate exactly the way I want it to. And maybe you understand on a different level than yes. I do, but I'm curious as to like what you think. Is there like a juxtaposition between those two? Like this yes. controlled command?
Yes. So let me break it down. So, yeah. And Joel and I are friends. Like I've sure. talked to Joel a whole bunch. I just had dinner with yeah. him at the Rumble. Yeah. So
yeah, if that came off negative, it was not my intention.
No, not at all. So Joel's program is focused more on the mental mm-hmm. or on the conscious side of mm-hmm. stuff. If you listen to him talk, it's like, you have to think this, think that. That's mm-hmm. all conscious mind.
Right.
And so he doesn't do anything with the subconscious. Well, Google it if you don't believe me. Like, the conscious mind makes up about 10% of your brain and the subconscious makes up 90%. So the 10% matters, absolutely. And like, what you're consciously thinking matters. So if I draw back and I'm like, I'm so screwed, my pin is everywhere, or like, oh my God, everyone's watching me, please don't shoot a 9. Of course, yep. If I'm thinking things like that, the conscious mind matters. It can hurt you, right? And so Joel teaches, from my understanding, it's like, pick a word, and he has you like yell the word at yourself. And I've heard him say like, be the loudest person in the room or whatever in your head. Great. I have my own version of that. Like, I teach, I started with a song. I've done phrases. I've done single words. To me, I don't think it actually matters all that much on what you pick. I believe that from the conscious side of it, you just need to distract your conscious mind and get it out of the way so the subconscious can run its process. Like, typically when the conscious mind starts trying to run the show, that's when we have a problem. So I don't particularly agree with the teaching of everything needs to be conscious. Like, no, actually, if you do it, like, when our conscious is in the way, that's when it's a problem. Right. And so the best one I've found, though, is sing a song. And the reason being is I've had things where I would say a word or I would say a phrase. And for the while, I used a phrase. I'd read Lanny's books, the With Winning in Mind. And it was like, okay, believe in yourself, nothing but X, I can. And I'd be like, yeah, no, like, my pin's in the 8. Or like, no, I'm shaking everywhere. And so when I was thinking in words, it was very easy to let negative words creep into my mind. When you sing a song, you have a rhythm. And so to think anything, you can't think two thoughts at once consciously, right? And so if I'm singing the song, to think something negative, I would have to break the rhythm and then think in words. And so when I'm at my mentally most vulnerable, or like my weakest, the song has actually been my favorite fallback. Because if I'm like really shitting my pants out there, or even hunting, like the song is just something where it's like, okay, I've got the rhythm. That's what my conscious mind is focused on. And I can just let the subconscious process do its thing. So Joel and I are doing two completely different things.
Right.
Like, he is teaching you, and don't get me wrong, like, for my membership, I am teaching them all of this stuff too inside. Sure. Like, that's why I want to do those weekly lives with them, and or not weekly, monthly, but I'm going to do them more often and kind of interact and give them some of the stuff I just told you, but in higher detail. But what my program really highlights is the subconscious. And so no one else is doing that. Like, that's what makes it different. Yep. And that's what makes it so powerful. And so it is really, really good at stuff like building your confidence, truly building your self-image, because like everyone's could use that in today's world, right? For sure. Confidence scores. So our subconscious mind, like I said, it has patterns and repetition, but it also has comfort zones. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times, and you've shot target enough to know this, you kind of have like your average. Yep. And it's like you start really good and then all of a sudden you tank at the end. You're like, crap, I landed at my average. Or if you start really bad, you're like, this is going to be a crap round. And then all of a sudden you pick it up at the end. That is your subconscious's way of keeping you in its comfort zone. So using my program, it's very good at like pre-programming your subconscious to a higher comfort zone that you haven't actually achieved yet. Mm-hmm. So like, if you were a Vegas, I'm just making this up, right? 295 shooter. And you're like, I want to get to be a 300 shooter. If we're telling your subconscious you're a 300 shooter over and over and over and over, as you start to shoot those scores, instead of it tanking you and holding you back, it's going to let you do that because that is its new comfort zone. So the biggest key takeaways with that, the subconscious mind cannot tell the difference between truth and lie at all. A lot of people probably heard about visualization, like you visualize sports things and different things like that. Visualization is using the subconscious mind, and the subconscious mind cannot tell the difference between a visualized event or the actual physical event. So a lot of people, they're like, yeah, I just don't believe that. I'm like, yeah, don't take my word for it. Go freaking Google it and look at the people way smarter than me. Like, it's science, okay? That's not like me making that shit up. And so the only reason it works is because that is the science, right? If the science didn't work, it wouldn't work. Right. And so essentially, I do think, like, when people say you need to be in control of your shot, yeah, I agree. Like, if you have crippling target panic and you're not in control, that's a problem, right? Now, how do we gain back that control? I think it needs to be done from the mental side and the physical side, right? Like, there's two elements, and it's like a fire, and we're going to hose it down from both sides instead of one. That's going to basically solve that problem faster.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. I told this story before, but a number of years ago, I had an elk tag in Wyoming, and I snuck down to this group of elk. They come feeding out, stringer of cows, bull comes out. He's 55 yards broadside, steps out the other side of the tree. I draw on him, I anchor in, and I was shooting a hinge. It's an HT Pro at the time, so a four-finger brass hinge. And I'm at full draw, and I'm in it, and my pin's, like, you know, circling, hovering right there on the kill spot. And I remember my mind, vividly. I'll never forget this. Like, vividly. My mind is screaming now, 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 now. And, like, just over and over.
Yeah.
And it didn't break. Shot didn't break. But then when it finally did break, it broke. And I shot one of the most, probably the most perfect arrow I've ever shot on an animal under that much pressure, right? But I think that goes back to, like, subconscious, right? Because, like, I couldn't have performed that.
If no, your conscious mind, your yeah. conscious mind was saying now, and your subconscious mm-hmm. was like, nope, I'm running my program. You just wait a minute. Yes.
Yeah. Yep.
But a lot of people in that situation would have went now and shot and had that happen because the conscious would have overridden the subconscious.
Right. So I completely agree with you. I wished I could say that happened every single time, that it always worked, but it
doesn't for anyone.
But on that one, it did. Run me through your so we've talked a little bit about it, but tell me, like, it's $99 a year. I know that, right? So you pay for that. You can sign up online. When you do that, you're going to get access to one of the programs, and I think you've got 4 or 5 at this point.
Yeah, there's 5 now. I'm working on, like, 5 more as we speak. There's going to be a whole bunch in there moving forward. I'm just going to keep building, like, essentially a library. So all they are is audio recordings.
Mm-hmm.
And are you familiar with Lanny's stuff at all?
Yeah.
Okay.
I haven't read the book, but I'm familiar with it.
Okay. So one of the things he talks about in his book is daily affirmation cards. Mm-hmm. So you, like, write a little card and you write it, just a little 3x5 card, post them around the house, write it like you've already achieved whatever it is you want to achieve. So, like, mine would be, I'm the 2026 Vegas champion and I shot a 900 and all this stuff. So that is essentially, like, bare minimum entry level subconscious reprogramming. You're reading that every day, building that up. Well, I just stumbled upon this, honestly, by accident. I was in law school and I was trying to remember definitions and I couldn't. I recorded my definitions and listened to them out loud in my car and I learned them so much faster. And I was like, dang, maybe if I record my daily affirmation card, that'll work better. So it was a total fluke accident that I did that. And I did. And I was like, wow, that's helping more. So I started kind of diving into that, doing research, trying to understand. Because again, I, like, this isn't me making this up. I read online from people way smarter than me. And so trying to learn how the brain works and why and, like, how to make that all come together. So long story short, very long story short, the more relaxed you are, the deeper and faster stuff goes into your subconscious mind. And so I'm not a very relaxed person. So, like, having an intro was important. Like, initially it was just something calming. Now I've learned that as we include different senses in the initial walk down. So every recording has an initial walk down and then a body, which is, like, the key information that you need, like what you're trying to tell your brain. And then it has an ending. And there's, when you purchase a recording. So you said it's $99. You get your first recording. You can pick whichever from the list. Once you're in, then the recordings are only $15 after that. So you can buy more if that's what you need for different issues or different things. And each one will then come with a sleep and an awake version. And then I'm working on a third thing now that's going to go up very shortly where it's a body only. Mm-hmm. So it does work better and faster if you, like, sit down, listen to the whole recording, and you get the full intro and you walk down and you're in that relaxed state of mind. It's going to go into your subconscious deeper and faster. But just like anything else, the more you listen, the faster and better it works. So a lot of people are using it while driving. They're using it while practicing. So they didn't need the intro and they didn't need the exit. They just needed the body. So it's now also going to come with a body only that just, like, you can repeat as well. So we got the loop version in there and whatever. So the recordings I have in there right now, I've got some for Target Panic. I have, like, 2, depending on your release style. I have a confidence and self-image, which everyone could use. And then I become a winner, and then I have a bow hunting success one.
Yeah, talk to me about it.
Yes. So to highlight that one, it essentially goes over being in control of yourself and your thoughts and your mind and your body, like, in that pressure situation. Mm-hmm. So it's going to help you basically stay calm, like, through the shot, have the confidence. So, like, it walks you through, like, a shot, and it's like you see the animal coming and you take a deep breath. Like, you're confident, you know, you've prepared and you're ready and you can make a perfect shot. And it, like, walks you through a bunch of different things like that, building your confidence, which is very important, but also from a realistic standpoint of, like, you know, you've trained for this. It's at a distance you're comfortable with. Like, you know, you can make this shot. And then how many times do you ask a bow hunter, like, well, where'd you aim? Did you use the right pin? And they're like, I don't know. I don't have any clue.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I think it's probably the most commonly stated, but I almost don't know anybody that could, like, fully own that they picked a spot. Like, everybody has pick a spot written on the back of their bow or someplace, you know, where they can reference it. In the moment, I can only tell you probably all the animals that I've ever shot. I could probably tell you, like, 3 or 4 that I actually picked a spot.
So that used to be me, like using that mental training, like that's gotten significantly better. And so simple things like centering your housing in your peep, right? It'd be like, well, was it centered? And they're like, I don't know. Yeah. And so this is essentially giving you the mental awareness to be able to be in control of that stuff, but still let your subconscious mind run its process. So it's building in those gaps in the subconscious process to where at least if their answer is, I don't know, that we built that into the subconscious to make sure that it's going to do it every time subconsciously instead of them not. And let's be honest, like bow hunters typically shoot their bow a lot less than target archers. So from the standpoint of it, everything that's needed to be subconscious, maybe they're not as great at. Like most target archers, if you're like, was your bubble in the middle? They'd be like, yes. You ask bow hunters, they're like, my bubble, huh? I don't know. I didn't look like, so all those key little things that like are often easily missed in the moment when we're bow hunting, that recording is going to talk through. It's going to walk you through that. And then it basically walks you through shooting the animal. And it's like, you're aware of your pins. Like you're looking at your pins. You are picking a spot on the animal. Like you're still letting it flow, but you are choosing to do this. It's like, okay, now you're executing. So it kind of walks you through a shot while building the confidence and the control that you need. And then all of them have what's called forward thinking. So it's like, okay, imagine yourself 3 months in the future. Now, forward thinking is a really powerful tool when it comes to the subconscious mind, which is why it's now included. Like years ago when I started making these, I didn't know that they weren't in there. Now they are. Mm-hmm. And then also what's called a grounder. And so a lot of the times you're in the moment and you're panicking. And there's been plenty of times hunting or tournament stuff where I'm sitting there and you're like waiting, and it's always the waiting that gets me. It's like you're seeing the deer coming, or if it's fast, I'm good.
Sure.
But waiting, it's like it just builds and builds and builds and builds. And so the grounder essentially gives you a way of doing something physically or doing something and thinking something at the same time to kind of like reaccess those calming feelings. So it will say like you feel happy and proud and calm and all these things. And if you want to feel these outside the recording, do this. And I'm trying to remember which one is in that recording because they all have their own. But like, essentially, I think it's take a deep breath and in and out and think something while you do that. That's what most of them are. Or like one of them is like make a fist and relax. That won't be the hunting one because usually your hands are full or, you know, you can't. But by using that grounder, it allows them to kind of reaccess that consciously and subconsciously without listening to the recording. But the biggest thing that I think is interesting, and I have my first live schedule tomorrow with the membership, so I'm going to talk to them about this, is everybody thinks they're going to feel different or they're going to think different. Well, if you're thinking different, that's your conscious mind. And so I've had a lot of feedback already, and it's all been great. But the funniest part to me is everyone starts with, I don't understand how or why, because I swear I feel the same and I thought the same. But I shot the best I ever have in my life, or I beat my PV, or I won this tournament. Like they're doing things they could not do before, but they didn't think differently. I'm like, well, yeah, if you thought differently, that's your conscious mind. Like that's why this is so powerful, because I'm accessing the part of your brain that you don't consciously have access to. That 90%, like the iceberg theory, you see the little part of the iceberg and the big part below. I'm accessing the part below that you can't just tap into, that has to be programmed outside to like perform its best. Right. And so in archery, nobody else is doing that. Nobody else is talking about it. And it's really been missing. I've known I was going to launch this for years. Like I've had it kind of lined up for years, and I was just waiting and waiting and waiting. And so finally I booked a bunch of seminars and I was like, okay. And the difference too, like, let me say you highlighted Joel. It's called shot IQ, right? So a lot of times he's going in and trying to change someone's shot or change someone's something. With my program, I'm not trying to change you. That doesn't mean I don't want to if I saw you shoot a bow, right? But I am essentially trying to make people better with what they're working with right now and like plug in those mental gaps and like give them the true building blocks that they need to be successful. Now, in seminars, like there's definitely people that I'm like, let me fix your shot. But I'm not like, there's only one way. I've shot 100 different ways over the years and different releases and different, like everyone's brain is different. And so I like to tailor the stuff that I'm doing to the individual, because what works for some people won't always work for others.
Yep.
Now, the difference is if you listen to these recordings, there's nothing in it. Like you've got to be so intentional when writing them. That's why they take so long to make. But there's nothing negative to where if you listened, it can make you worse. Like feel good about yourself and believe in yourself and you have the skill and the ability. Like even if you don't, if you like feel better about that, it's going to make you better. Yep. So if I was saying like, very detailed things about you do this with your shoulder, or, you know, you do this percentage with your grip. Like, detailed things could screw people up if they're not doing that, right? They're purposely generalized to not try to fix someone's fine details when it comes to form or anything else like that. Yep. We are solely fixing the subconscious mind. We're building in the positivity, the consistency, and the repetition that a lot of people are missing.
The grounding really speaks to me, like that portion of it, because you are right. Like, that is the hardest part. And as I'm thinking about it, like in a hunting situation, the longer you have to wait for that animal, sometimes it's a little better, but I would say if you've got like a bedded mule deer buck and he's going to be there for 35 or 40 minutes, it builds and builds and builds and builds. And then when he stands up, it just feels like you want to explode. I know that like last year when I shot Vegas, you know, any practice rounds that I've shot on my own, I'm shooting arrows, you know, three arrow ends, and I'm pulling my arrows and I'm getting back to my line and I'm shooting them again. You know, come to find out I've got, you know, upper target, lower target, and I've got that 2 or 3 minutes wait in between. I'm like falling apart. That's when I was falling apart.
Yes.
I'm sitting there and I was like, shit, I have to wait like 3 or 4 minutes, you know, and then you have to score and all that. I'm like, this sucks.
Yeah.
Like, that's where I'm falling apart. So that part of it speaks to me in a big way, because
it is,
you know, I'm thinking, I killed a bull in Colorado a few years ago and it was the same thing. I had to wait for him to stand up and come down to check his cows. And that whole time it was just ramping up and up and up. And I'm like trying to work through, like, how do I ground myself? And I was doing it through like breathing exercises. I was trying to like, you know, breathe work, you know, breath work, anything I could do. But, even still, as he got up, you know, I feel like my head's
nervous.
Explode.
Yeah. Nervous. So that's where like the grounder that I've picked in there is like, okay, I'm trying to remember what it says, but like the one that I've always used for target stuff is inhale, calm, exhale, relaxation. Yeah. So I think like calm, relaxation. And I'm like breathing like that. And I can't tell you how many times over the last 10 years that I've been like waiting for a shoot off or something, you know, like or waiting to go shoot whatever first in, last in. And you're like, it's building and you're starting to have that panic happen and you're like, no. And I like use that. And it's just like a, like kind of like a reset. And that's what it's intended for. Even if people don't use that, like, you know, daily affirmation cards from Lanny, that's not part of it. All the little parts that I've built in are things that I've learned from different like sports psychologists and like experts in the field and people who've done this in other avenues. Yeah. I got really lucky. I went to a lady in Reading and she was retiring. And so she made tapes like this for people. And I'd already been making my own, but they were not good, right? They were just like the basics of, I didn't know anything. And I'd done some research and a few things had gotten better. But I went to her and she was like, rather than me make you a tape, I'm going to be retiring. Like, do you want to just do these appointments with me and I'll just teach you like all the things? Mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah. So I did like 15 in-person appointments with her, like learning each element, like why it's important and how it works different with the brain and like all of that stuff. And it was like, okay, now I'm intrigued. So then I started doing all sorts of online trainings. And just like anything else, everyone has their own little spin on stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So I wanted to test all those different things over the years to figure out what really helped more. And so that's kind of what I did. And it was like trial and error. And it was like, no, the grounder, I could see a difference. The forward thinking, yes, like I could see a difference. Like different key parts in there that are in there that were important helped for sure. And then another cool additive that I learned later on as I was doing this, like I used to just have relaxing meditation music, right? Yeah. Well, the music that's on these is actually called binaural beats. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people are familiar with those from like other apps or other things. But essentially, if you have headphones on or in, it puts a different hertz frequency in each ear. And your brain does not like that. So your brain creates a balancing frequency in the middle. And they can control what the balancing one is created based off what they're putting in your ears. So theta waves, theta brain waves, are like the best state for like meditation and subconscious reprogramming. And so the music that is on there is actually binaural beats that force your brain to generate theta waves, whether in that relaxed state of mind or not. And so that was a huge help for me because I'm crazy, right? And doing all the things all the time. And I have a really hard time calming down, even listening to the walk down. And so I did notice that it was faster and effective once I started using the binaural beats over normal music, because it forces my brain to create theta waves. As that's happening, it allows the stuff to go in deeper and faster than it normally wouldn't. So there's like a ton of elements within these recordings. Like to the average person, I'm like, sit down, relax, listen to the recording. Like it's not that hard. But like, I essentially want them to know there is way more like science pieces in that that have really helped them build and improve over the years from where I started.
Right. Yeah, and I think from a bow hunter's perspective, I think anything that you can do to make yourself a better bow hunter, I think you owe it not mm-hmm. only to yourself, but more so you owe it to the animal. Because, yeah, you want to make the best shot possible. And I promise there's, I mean, there's a lot of hurt, but man, it hurts when you miss an animal, or even worse, when you wound one and you don't find it. Like, it's a real bummer. So I think anything that you can do, I'm always an advocate for trying to, you know, improve your craft. I'm going to sign up. I was one of my goals for this is I was like, I want to hear Paige. I want to hear it firsthand from you. And I want to feel like I'm convinced that I'm convinced. Like, I
really want to see more bow hunters use it because I know how much it can actually help them. And here's the thing. I'm known as like a target archer because of all the things I've done in target archery, but I started hunting and like going with my parents. I mean, they drug me around from the day I was born, you know, like out in the woods and in California, like you got to pass this big lengthy, you know, test to get your hunting license. So I did that when I was 8, started bow hunting turkeys and like all the things that I could then. Turned 12, I could hunt all the big game. I've been doing that forever. Like I ran a nonprofit for like 5 years. I'm on the board for that now. And we like get kids into the outdoors. And I'm actually a hunter education instructor for the state of California. So we would put like 200 kids a summer through hunter education. And I hunt a ton. Like people don't realize that. When you ask me how many weekends I'm shooting tournaments, I'm like, well, every other one I'm pretty much hunting something. And so I mean, I've got like, they joke, like I've got all the animals and walls all around the house. I could go give you a mount tour, but like I'm known on the target side, but like I do so much on the hunting side that I feel like people just don't quite see. Like I don't have a hunting show, right? Like I post it on my social media, but like I'm not on TV doing that. I'm not like a known name in the hunting side of the industry, but I like hunting more than I like tournaments. Like there's no question. If you said pick what you want to do, I would never shoot another tournament in my life and I would just bow hunt every weekend. So I can say firsthand, starting bow hunting as a kid and then learning all this stuff. And again, I pursued this because of what I was doing in target. Had I just been a bow hunter, I never would have, truthfully. But the benefits that I've seen come from this, not just on the target side, but carry over to the hunting side, is something I didn't expect. Like I didn't realize the impact that that was going to have. But like when I'm in the hunting situations now, in that moment of truth, you like draw back on something like this or, you know, whatever. It's like, it's just when I'm at my best, you're almost thinking nothing. It's like this moment of clarity where you're just doing it. And it's just like so natural and you have the confidence and you know, you have the ability and you like believe in yourself. There's no doubt. It's not, oh, I hope I do this. Oh, please don't do this. Oh, I'm shaking. I'm nervous. Like, I don't think anything like that. And doing the subconscious stuff will also help that carry over to the conscious mind. So there's a challenge that I give everyone. And again, the membership people are going to learn this tomorrow. But it's essentially to help reprogram how your conscious mind thinks. So this is something different than my program, but I teach this in all my seminars, is we're pretty much wired to think to the negative nowadays, like just social media, the internet, the world right now. It's just what it is.
One of my new resolutions.
Good. Okay. Well, then I want you to do this. And 30 days from now, I want you to tell me. Okay. So I say anytime that you think something negative, not just about yourself, but especially about yourself or just anything negative in general, or you say something out loud that is negative, thinking or speaking, stop yourself and rephrase it into something that's maybe not fake positive. Okay. I'm not asking you to be unrealistic, but if I was going to say I'm in a seminar and I have someone working on something and they go, I can't do this. I'm like, no. And they're like, this is difficult, but if I keep working, I'll get it down. And it's like that. And so simple things, and I've said this in seminars and like I've seen, and it breaks my heart, but I've seen like young girls start crying and they're like, dude, my inner self, like I talk to myself so mean in my head, like I'm so mean to myself. And it's like, we're gonna fix that, right? Like the subconscious reprogramming tapes can absolutely help build up your self-image, but it doesn't help. Like your subconscious and conscious work against each other all day long. So we can build it up from there. But if you're still thinking consciously all these horrible things, that's not gonna help either. So like, let's fix that too. And so, I have some like general ones coming out for confidence, self-image, nothing to do with archery or sports or anything, just like for people in general. But essentially with that, it's like, I want everyone to commit to that for a month. And it's like, okay, if you really hold yourself accountable to stopping yourself anytime you go to the negative and rethinking that, within a month, your brain starts to auto go to the positive instead of always go to the negative. And it just makes you a better, happier person. Like you'll be a better spouse. You'll be a better parent. You're happier in your job. Like most people go through their days in today's world, pissed off, miserable, upset, leaning to the negative. Like, you can just go read the comment section on any post. And sure. I just read it and I'm like, I'm so sad for these people because yeah. it's so blaringly apparent they're miserable in their life. If you do that for 30 days, it is going to make you a happier person. And that's like a really good thing that we can use to build on top of that as well. Yeah. And it carries over to hunting. Like, if you're yeah. like on a stalk, it's like, for sure. I've got this. I don't want to be, you know, like anytime you're leaning toward the positive, you're setting yourself yeah. up for success rather than for failure.
Yeah. Tons of people I talk to, they'll say, like, I just went on an archery elk hunt in Arizona. It's a late season hunt. It's got low success historically. And most people, I've killed, you know, a couple bulls that way. And people reach out and say, what? How do you do it? And I'm like, well, I don't, there's like not a magic bullet, but really the one thing that you can't do is you can't turn down any stock, like any stock opportunity, even though, you know, going into it, like you're probably going to have this little devil on your shoulder and he's going to say, this is never going to work out. And statistics yep. would tell you that it's not, but you have to talk to yourself into going and you just have to go yep. on every single one and go do it and just go try it. But yeah, I mean, how many
times? Did you kill one? I'm guessing you did. Yeah, I got one,
yeah. Yeah, but I mean, I don't know how many times I've got within an animal and you're just like, oh, this is not going to work. This isn't going to work, you know? So yeah, I totally get it. Like positive self-talk. And I think you're right. I think it compounds. So I already said it's like a New Year's resolution. So I've been mm-hmm. practicing it this last month since the new year. And I think it's making a difference because 2025 was not my favorite year, so I'm trying to improve it. But
me either.
Yeah.
The thing is, at first, it'll feel forced, just sure. so people know. Yeah, like, it's going to feel fake as hell.
It feels fake.
And very forced.
For sure.
But if you stick with it, that mm-hmm. becomes how it thinks naturally, and it doesn't become forced. Yep. So, you know.
Yeah. Hey, the last thing I want to say about your program for bow hunters that are listening, and then I want to ask you is just like a few technical questions if you got a minute. But yep. It's $99. Okay. And it's a mental program. It's not a new gadget. It's not a release, which I've got right here that I, you know, picked up in my hand. But the thing I wanted to say, and this is what I had this realization. I was talking to myself about it today and I was like, how many new gadgets do I buy? Like a billion. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know how many releases I've got in my release pouch, right? I don't know how many different inserts I've tried and points and broadheads and all the shit, right? I spend all the money, and reality is probably none of that is going to make me, well, I know for a fact, it's not going to make me a better archer
no.
or a better bow hunter, right? It's not yeah, going no. to make the actual moment of truth when an animal steps out. It's not going to make the likelihood that I will make that shot any better, but this is something that will.
Trying to stress that is like, you know, right. my goal was the more people that use it, like word of mouth, I know it works. Like there's no mm-hmm. doubt it works. Like you can go look at all these other sports. They're all using it. This has been proven for so many years. Right. I know it works. And so it's like archers are so quick and willing to spend money on any equipment or for any sure. like gadgety thing that they think is going to fix them. More often than not, it doesn't. Don't get me wrong. There are levels of good and not good equipment and whatever. But yeah. for the most part, that isn't the fix it thing that should be used, and it is. So you're right. I hope that more people think of it from that perspective, not just so they buy into my program, but because I know it will help. Like it will be the best $99 they've spent for themselves. Yeah. And like I've already had, and I'm going to keep sharing this stuff too, but like mm-hmm. the feedback has been insane and it's only been a month. Like there was a kid there who shot really great in that tournament. And he was yeah. like, it's helping me so much. And you know, it's smoother. It's easier. It's better. Like I had another kid listening to it. In the last 2 weekends, he'd missed a point and he rolls into the rumble, which is the most important one. And he shoots a 900 with like 82 or 83 X's. And it's like, yeah. yes. And so people are seeing that improvement already. I had someone say, I normally don't shoot 300s and I've rolled in and shot 300s in league in the last 3 leagues. I've never done that before. Like, how is this working? And so it's cool because the target stuff's happening so much more often. They get to see the improvement faster.
Right.
What I really want out of the membership is the more they listen, the more it's going to work. So if somebody buys that now and they're waiting for hunting season to roll around and they listen 3 times and then they quit listening, no, it's not going to help you come bow season. Mm-hmm. And so I want to use the membership side. So I'm going to have like behind the scenes content on there. I'm going to do like those live things pretty often so we can all like chat, talk, interact, all that stuff. I really want to be able to keep the people motivated to make sure they keep listening because I know the more that they listen, the better it's going to be. But just like anything else, how many people, it's like, oh, January, time to get a gym membership, and they go for 3 weeks and then they quit. Like, obviously I didn't launch this anything to do with New Year's, but like, I don't want it to be something like a New Year's resolution where you're dedicated for 3 weeks and you give up. This is proven. Like, it will help you. And you know, how many times is a coach, oh, go shoot 300 arrows or go do all these things. Like if your coach said, sit on your ass and listen to something for 20 minutes. Is that not the easiest thing like anyone's ever asked you to do? Sure. Or if you don't even have time for that, hit play and then go to sleep. Because it's not your conscious mind. Like your subconscious is still hearing that. So even if you just hit play and you let it play as you go to sleep, you're still getting the benefit. So there's really no excuse to not use it, right? Like if you want to be committed and you really want to improve, there are absolutely ways that you can fit that into your day. And to me, I'm like, that is the easiest ask you will ever, like it, literally, if I said, sit on your butt for 20 minutes a day and listen to something and you're going to get better. Mm-hmm. As much time and money as I've spent doing things, I'd be like, yes, okay, I'm happy to try anything. So I just hope they have an open mind. Like, I don't have to preach the science. I don't need to tell 10,000 stories of all these people that I know have already started to see benefits. Like, if you try it, it will speak for itself. Like, they will see it for sure. I already know that. And so it's like, just take the risk. And if you hate it, you don't have to keep doing it. But I promise, like, it helps for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I dove deep. I haven't historically been like a New Year's resolution, you know, setter and then because I just didn't set them. But this year, like I said, 2025 just wasn't my favorite year. So I'm trying to be really intentional about it this year going into it. And, you know, as I've dove more deep into it, you talk about building a system rather than setting a resolution, right? So it's not a resolution. It's not even a goal. It's a system that you're going to build for yourself so that you maintain it. Part of that's accountability. And I love the fact that with your membership, you're going to have these, you know, monthly roundtables where you can get together and ask yourself questions. To me, that's also a good way to hold myself accountable. Like if I attend those, I get to listen to them. I get to hear what other people's experiences are, you know? So I think it's part of the accountability and a continued movement towards building a system versus just like, you know, that's my resolution and you don't take it seriously. So I like that. I like that part of it. Can I ask you like a couple technical questions and then
you can ask me anything you like.
And then I've got some rapid fire type ones I want to hit you with, and I don't want to take all your time because I know you have another one today and two in a day.
I might need to grab a phone charger real quick, if that's okay, because I'm a slacker and was dying. Sorry.
Totally fine. One sec. Yep.
Right. If you leave this cool, if you edit this cool, but at least it's in a transition.
I just leave it, Paige.
Okay. I don't actually care. There we go.
I figure
I'm people, like, yeah, they I feel like I hadn't been on my phone that much today, but apparently it's already dying. So
One question I wanted to ask you is I've talked to other, you know, professional archers. I remember talking to Kyle and his dad one day at Western Hunt Expo, and one thing he was telling me, he's like, his dad was actually telling me this. He said, yeah, Kyle one day shot a great round, 300, I don't know, 29 X's, and he just built this bow. And he's like, then he turns around that night, goes out in the garage, completely tears the whole thing down and rebuilds it. And, you know, his dad was asking him, why'd you do that? You just shot a phenomenal round. And he's like, that bow, it didn't perform the way I wanted it to under pressure. So, and I hear you've talked about it. I hear other people talk about it, but like, what does that mean to you to build a bow? What does that feel like to you to build a bow that is going to compete for you under pressure?
Anything that I do from a building standpoint or a tuning standpoint is to essentially get forgiveness out of the system. Now, what that means is I can do things less correctly or less good, and I can get away with it. Essentially, they still hit the middle. And in practice, I could probably shoot any bow, set up any way, and shoot rounds like that. 28, 29X games, like it's easy and it's fine.
Right.
When you get under pressure, things do not work the same. Your body's not the same. And so a lot of the times you will see, like, you might have a bow that you think is so great and then it opens up, or, you know, maybe you stumble on something and get lucky and it goes the other way. More often than not, that's not the case. And so for example, like every bow aims a little bit different, right? Mm-hmm. And like in that example with Kyle, and I obviously know Kyle very well. We're really good friends. Sure. Like it could have been that like the sight pin movement that he was seeing, he knows that his subconscious brain isn't going to be very okay with in a tournament. Yeah, he could do it fine in practice. And yeah, it didn't fight him. But he knows from past experiences, like his mind is going to hate that aiming pattern, speed, movement that he's seen, like whatever. And that needs to be fixed. So there's times where I'm doing the same. Like I might go back and say, it's shooting great, it's grouping great, but like I have to improve the aim because the aim's only going to get worse when I get nervous and get under pressure and my brain already doesn't like what it's seen. Mm-hmm. And so, or it's aiming good. And it's like, okay, it groups fine when I'm not nervous, but then not so good when I am. So I use this for target stuff. And I would love if the bow hunters would want to try this as well. Right. I posted a video and I think people thought I was joking, but do like 30 jumping jacks and then pick your bow up and shoot it. How's it shoot? Because if it is the same or better, then you have the forgiveness and the setup you need. But if you do that and it starts spraying, well, guess what? That's what's going to happen when your heart rate goes up when you're trying to shoot an animal and like the adrenaline kicks in. Same thing in a tournament setting. So I've had times where it's like, okay, I don't have like tournaments and I really want to start the season good. And I will literally build a bow, do all my group tuning, try to get it as good as I can. And I do not group tune for hunting. Side note, hunting, I'm just broadhead tuning. Okay.
I was going to ask.
Totally different tuning processes. They're the same for a while and then they veer off. Mm-hmm. And I do all that on the target side. And then it's like, okay, let's bring in the jumping jacks and let's shoot this and let's see, does it still perform? And if it doesn't, odds are it is not going to be a very forgiving setup in tournaments. Or you don't do that. You go to a tournament, you suck, and then you go back to the drawing board. Essentially, I'm trying to use that to eliminate the suck in the first place, right? But all of us are trying to find forgiveness on the, anyone who knows what they're doing. Let me rephrase that. On the tournament side is trying to find forgiveness because we aren't perfect. We are absolutely human. And if you can build a setup that even when you aren't at your best, you don't see a score change or like a group change to the negative, then that's what you want. That's what we're trying to achieve.
And I'm thinking of it from a bow hunter's perspective. I mean, you know, I'll set up a bow and get it to where I'm feeling right. And I'll shoot. I just shoot by myself. I don't even have a shooting buddy. My shooting buddy's my dog. But we go out and we shoot arrows every single day, but there's no pressure, right? I just am out flinging arrows at my local range every single day. But then, you know, the pressure of an animal walking in front of me is so through the roof. It's like I've never experienced it. So it's like I couldn't tell you if that bow is going to perform under pressure or not because I've probably never tested it.
So one thing that happens, it's very common for your actual impact point to change. Mm-hmm. And a lot of bow hunters I know don't realize this. And so in tournaments, unfortunately, we do, and it really sucks when it happens. But like how hard you pull into the cams can drastically change like where the impact point is essentially. Or if you're push-pulling different, your grip pressures, right, can change that as well. And so sometimes what you'll find is it's not just like, oh, it's not forgiving. It's like, holy crap, when I get nervous, I hit a foot left at 60 yards that I don't when I'm calm. Like those are the things that it's really important we try to work out of your setup initially, because that's like the difference between killing an animal or missing and wounding an animal, right? And so we know that on the target side, like absolutely, like every once in a while I'll have a setup and it's like, dude, as soon as the harder I pull on it, it starts to hit low. Like if I'm soft on it, I'm fine. You pull harder, it's low. You got to fix that. So there's other little things like that, that when you can really flesh out those issues in your system, you can hopefully fix them and eliminate them before it becomes a real issue when it matters.
Yeah. And you only know that if you tinker with it. It's good advice knowing that, like, you assuming that your adrenaline's probably going to spike and you may pull if you have a shot where you pull into the wall versus like a more static shot. Yeah. It's
when you add adrenaline, you are pulling harder. Yeah. Like whether you think you are or not, you are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It'd be something good to test. The fix for that, I mean, it's probably multifaceted, but is it shortening a draw length for you typically? Is it adding more weight to the bow?
Every bow is different. Like it depends on where I start.
I knew that was a good question.
Yep. Like I pick my draw length off what aims best. Right. So I have like probably a half inch variance of like, oh, any of these could be my draw length. Like it doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. But like one end might aim great and the other end might aim horrible, or the middle might be great and these are terrible. So general, this is so general. I hate like the general rules, but just to throw one out, if your drawing's too short, you see a lot of quick vibrating movements. And if it's long, it's slower, but like bigger, uncontrollable type movements. Now that more plays into a target setup than a hunting setup, but still. And so, but I'll try it all the ways. So if I'm like, okay, I think this is my home base, what I've been rolling with, I'll do string manipulation or cable manipulation to shoot. I'm not talking half inch adjustments. I'm talking, you know, one twist in each cable or, you know, three twists in the string, like smaller adjustments to try it a little shorter and try it a little longer. And like, I just pick whatever aims best and executes best for my body in that moment. That could be different year to year. Like maybe I had an injury, or I'm stronger, or you're weaker, or you got sick. Like maybe when I got sick at the end of last year, I ended up with pneumonia and I still had some tournaments to shoot. And it was like, I couldn't hold my bow up. So I cut weight and I shortened my drawing a little bit and I lessened my holding weight a little bit, like all things to make it more user friendly to me being sickly and weak. But like when I'm stronger, that is not what aims best, but that's what aims best in the moment. So when you understand your equipment, it's very easy to like make those adjustments based off where you are at that time. And I think that if more people could do that, they would obviously see more success.
Yeah, which I think is the best advice I could. And I always tell people, it doesn't take much anymore to get into just the bare minimum equipment that you need to do your own work. And there's enough information out there via YouTube, yourself, I mean, wherever it might be. But you can really start to tinker. And that's where you start to learn is just tinkering and trying things. Yeah. And yeah,
and there's 100 different ways to do things right.
For sure.
Like in archery, there is no like, oh, this is the only way. If someone tells you that, you should probably run. Okay, like maybe that's like the red flag of don't listen to what they're saying. There are so many ways to do things. And so if they're just sharing what they do, take it, test it. And I bet you there's key parts of it you might like and other parts that you do not work for you. And that's okay. But you might fill in those other parts from someone else or from yourself. Yeah. And so essentially there's just a lot of resources available now. And my best thing is I don't care how much you love the person. Like if someone follows me and they're like, I just like what she does and I'm going to do that. Don't do that because what I do may not be the best thing that works for you. I want you to test all of those things.
Yeah.
And if it works for you, then I want you to do it. And if it doesn't, don't do it. Yeah. Like I try to teach from a standpoint of here's a test that you can do. And I like very strategically don't tell them where I landed, like a knock height test. I don't tell them where I tied it in or show them where it ran through the burr hole or whatever. Because if I do, people just go do that.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's not what I'm teaching you how. I'm not trying to just shove what I do down your throat, right? And so I really try to teach stuff from the here's some different tests that you can do. If you do this test, then you will find the point that's better for you. And I wish more people taught that way instead of just like, this is my way and this is what works. Because it does work for them, but it doesn't mean it will work for everyone. And so as long as you know that going into it, then I feel like people can really pick and choose and get the good information that works for them.
For sure. Context matters.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me hit you with another one. So this is a personal question of mine. So I've heard both sides from top level archers. One will say they come to full draw, the anchor, and they are solely staring at their intended point of impact and they're allowing their pin or their dot to float over that. But their intent, their focus is on their point of impact on the target. I've heard other people say maybe they can't see as well. I don't see that well.
Yeah.
I've got a bad right eye from a baseball thing that happened in high school, but I don't see my point of impact that well. And my focus often shifts to my pin, right? So I kind of watch my pin. My pin's in focus and my target's in blur. And I'm kind of watching my pin float, but I'm focused on it. Is there a right way? Is there a wrong way? And you already said that there isn't, but what advice would you give?
The masses would teach you have to stare at the target and that is the right way.
Mm-hmm.
My take on that is like, whatever works for you is the right way.
Okay.
I do not just stare at the center of the target and just watch the pin float around. I locked low for years, not on animals because there was no dot, right? Mm-hmm. But on targets and specifically like the yellow colored Vegas targets with all the colors, I would lock low. And so like wherever my eyes would look, my pin would sit below that. And so a lot of people will say, and there's probably like 90% of the archers that I've worked with seminars this fall that actually have some form of that. And it's pretty common, like especially type A people, your mind wants to see what you're aiming at. Mm-hmm. And so if there's like a middle you're trying to hit and you cover it up, it's like it wants to see it. A lot of the rifle shooters, they like popsicle stuff with their sights. That way it works the same way. So within reason, that's okay. But if it continually gets lower or it's significantly lower, like then we have a problem. It's inconsistent across distances, then we have a problem. And so for me, my pin has never went where my eyes are staring. So if I just stared at the center, like that isn't good enough. Like I look at the middle and then I look at my pin and force my pin to the middle. And then I'm kind of can then see both.
Mm-hmm.
But with my eyes, they're not great either. I've had LASIK once. It's already failed and I should do it again, but I'm too young. If I focus on the target, my pin is almost gone. Like it just washes out horrifically.
Yep.
So I almost have to keep my focal point on the pin to even have a pin to aim with. Is it wrong? Is it right? Nope. But it's just what works for me. And so I think way too many people get hung up on the like, it has to be this way. It's like, no, it doesn't. Like everyone is different. Everyone's brain, everyone's eyes, like a type A and a type B person aim completely different and are okay with completely different types of aiming. And so I think just trying to shove everyone in the same box is a lot of the problem that we have in archery. Like, sure. I think we need to embrace the fact that we're all different bodies and mind and vision. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, try to work with people to figure out what's best for them. Don't be afraid to try it both ways. And if one, it seems like you just have to think and fight and it's like hard and it's a challenge, and you do the other one and it's just easy, do that.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't really matter. I just don't like lose confidence in what you're doing though. Cause then people are like, that's the wrong way. And then you doubt mm-hmm. it and you question yourself. And if we can eliminate that and you just believe in what you're doing, you're going to have more success.
Yeah. I've gone back and forth. So I've tried it where I allow myself to focus on the target and let the pin float. But then what would happen? I would feel more relaxed, to be honest, because I can't see my pin moving, right? It's pretty mm-hmm. well blurred out and gone at that point. But what had happened is I would relax and I would break a really nice shot, but it would be 6 inches right because that's where my pin was, because I wasn't really focused on it at all, right, when the mm-hmm. shot broke. And so I'd do that for a while and be like, well, I'm not really hitting my target, so that's not good. So then I would start like focusing on my pin and I'd bring it back into the target. And then I would fight a little bit of anxiety of like getting my release to go off when I wanted it to. And so I'm kind of working this balance of trying to figure that out. So I did want to ask you, so I was curious as to your answer. And it sounds like, I mean, with my eyes, it sounds like I'm going to just have to focus a little bit on the pin. And then the issue is probably I'm going to have to work on just execution and relaxing and making that work. So that's interesting.
What kind of release are you shooting?
Oh, what day is it?
Okay. Like a thumb, a hinge, like do you go back and forth?
I would say I shoot hinges a lot. I shoot a thumb button quite a bit too. Okay. I shot hinge for years and years. So I had a really bad case of target panic. I had a buddy that just said, here, take this hinge and I'm going to teach you how to shoot it. And I just blank belled for probably 9 months in my basement with just a hinge. And I just did that. And it seemed to work as far as like breaking, you know, the flinching, if you will. And so that worked for that. And so for years and years and years, I just shot a hinge only. So I'm still probably most comfortable with a hinge. And I would say that's probably what I shoot the bulk of the time. But
okay. No, that's fine. I just did something not a little, like very unconventional this last tournament. And I shot a tension release, which like we don't do.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And right before we got on, I was filming a video I'll post later today, but I was saying like, I learned back tension when I was 8, like mm-hmm. back in the day before we even had D loops, I had the old Stanislavski with the loop on the release. And like, my nose is still crooked from that thing. Okay. I hit myself in the face so many times, but over the years, I've like learned to shoot my bow, but be lazy on the execution. And so going back and shooting that tension and like feeling what it really feels like to have to push and pull really hard to get it to fire, I was just like, holy cow, did I get lazy? Yeah. And I was still able to get it to go off all these years being lazy, but it's like, I think I just got lazier and lazier and lazier and lazier until finally it's like, I think I need a reset. Like I need to make myself work hard. And so, yeah, I just did that this last weekend and it was like, awesome.
How many pounds over your holding weight do you have it set?
You know what's funny? I don't even know. Okay. I just set it up until it was like firing and then I would just move it. And I never even tested it.
Does it feel like you have to pull pretty good to get it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Like I will pull normally. Like I don't, if you watch me, I don't like physically shake. Yeah. And like, I was literally like, you could see my hand like quivering. I was trying to pull so hard and I could have set it lighter and that would have made my life easier. But that also means I don't have to pull as hard. So I made myself work really hard with it and set it quite a bit heavier. And even in practice too, I set it even heavier than that. But to really make myself push pull with that. And so I'm pretty sure having done that, I might do it for another tournament or two. I don't know. I'm still on the fence, but I haven't actually opened my case from the Rumble yet. So I should probably do that and actually shoot. But going back to my hinge or my button, like, because I rotate between both two, that I know I picked my hinge up once and just went, and I was like, it was so fast. Like, how have I been slow at getting that off? Like you push pull at all and it fires. And so I kind of love that as like a good reset thing. And I had never done it myself. I told people to do it many times and seen it work for them, but this was the first, and mine wasn't because I was punching or flinching. I was just doing a lot of nothing, you know, just like waiting and not actually shooting the bow. Mm-hmm. So
sounds
still
like
a problem, right?
That does sound like me. I mean, you're describing me. That's what it feels like. As you describe it, that's what it feels like. It feels like
I will probably forever keep one of those in my release pouch. And even if it hit, not in the pouch, but in my quiver. And if it hits differently, I don't care. But like in practice, from here on out for the rest of my life, I will probably shoot 20, 30 arrows in practice a day. shooting that just because it's like really going to force you to do everything right. I pick the other stuff back up and it kind of holds you accountable. And so now that I realize how lazy I'd gotten, I was like, yeah, no. And when I'm hunting, it's so funny. It's like, you don't even think about it and it just happens. And like, I swear my release just fires and it's easy. But when you get in a tournament and you've got to do that 60 times or 100 times in a day, like that's where I think it gets a little bit harder. And so, and maybe it's reverse for other people. I don't know. But for me, the hunting ones, it's just like, it goes so easy. And the target stuff, it's like, why are you not firing? Like what? Yeah. Go, like what is happening, you know? Yeah. So yeah, I mean, I just did that and held myself accountable this weekend too. Like, I don't care how long you've shot a bow. Mm-hmm. Truthfully, the longer you shoot a bow, the more problems you're going to have to work through. Yeah. And the more arrows you shoot, the more likely you are to develop the problems that then you have to work through. So, isn't, you know, we've truth? All been through it. Yeah.
I was telling Derek Nelson, do you know Derek over at Matthews? I don't know if you know Derek, but I was just telling him, I said, man, I wish, like, you know, that saying ignorance is bliss. There's like, I wish I could go back to that where my draw length was ridiculously long. And I did. Yep. And I just picked it up and shot it. I had no, yep. I didn't know anything. And now I'm like so deep down the rabbit holes on so many different things. It's just like crazy going on in my head. Yeah. But yeah. No, I get that.
I think it's cool to know all that. So you can tinker and you can test. But what I always try to tell people is like, whenever you're done and you're like, okay, now I'm going to the hunt or I'm at the tournament, like then you just have to have, whether it's fake or not, but like just have the most utmost confidence in what you have because you can't fix it now. Like I get really technical and I'll tinker with stuff when I'm at home, but I'm never going to be in the middle of a tournament like, oh, this could be better. It's just holding me back. Or like, oh, if I had shortened my draw length, this would like not going to help me now. Right. I'm just like, nope, this is the best thing that I can use in the moment. And I'm going to do whatever it takes to make this work. Yeah. And even if I know that's not true, that's how I'm going to consciously think and I'll fix it later, you know, and I like that. Work through it.
You got time for just like some short answer ones?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
All right. So, yeah, and this is, you can take this from like your average bow hunter perspective, right? So an average bow hunter wants to, you know, he's kind of considering these. So blank bell or distance shooting, which one do you think would be more beneficial for most bow hunters?
Distance.
Really?
Yes. The reason I don't like blank bail is a lot of times when people are blank bailing, they have a problem they're trying to fix, usually called target panic.
Yeah.
Here's the problem. Whether it's a target or an animal or a deer or like whatever, the panic is comes from you aiming at said thing and then having to execute. So when you blank bail, you're taking the thing that's causing the panic out of the equation. Yes, you're going to be able to shoot good shots. But what happens when you bring that target back in? The panic is still there. Yeah. And so you said you did it for like 9 months. Yeah. If you can do it for that long, sure. But who the heck has that kind of time? I don't. Like, I have a tournament every weekend. Right. And so essentially if you're going to blank bail or do something like that, I always say take the target and like shrink it down. So you're seeing it the same. Like if you're going to shoot at 10 yards, like reduce the target X percentage. So it maths out to where it looks the same through your sight. Cause I want to fix my problems while I'm aiming at something that I'm going to be aiming. So as I'm building that new subconscious process, everything is in it. I don't want to build this perfect shot and then all of a sudden bring a target back in. And now I didn't actually build a perfect shot because the target screwed me up. So I'm not a huge blank bail fan. I think it's awesome for strength building. Like if you're an average bow hunter, you get home from work every night and you just want to blank bail in your garage to build strength and keep up. It's awesome. If you're trying to learn a new form, like set a new hand grip or something, or get your front shoulder down, set a new anchor point, blank bail is great for that. But if you're trying to fix some form of target panic, then usually that's not the best, most efficient way, in my opinion.
Gotcha. I like that.
Shooting distance shows everything you're doing on a magnified scale. So if you're doing it great, you're going to shoot great groups. If you're doing something wrong, it is going to show up times 10. So if you're an average bow hunter and you can go shoot at 80 yards and you can shoot great groups, everything closer is only going to be easier and better. Right. And so there's a reason that we say don't shoot past the distance you're comfortable because everything is magnified. So we do a lot of practicing at distance because then when we go forward and you shoot closer, you're like, this is easy. Like, I know I've got this. I just did this at 80. Like, yeah, I can do it at 40. And so I think, but if you're practicing at major distance and the movement and all that stuff is also causing target panic, that might need to come in stages. So it depends on where you're at, right? Like mentally and where you're at with your form and your shot. Both can be beneficial, but that's kind of my take on both and how I would use them.
I like it. People are going to have to go back and listen to that because you said there's a lot of golden nuggets in that. So
yeah.
I like it. Okay. Paper tune. Do you paper tune? And if so, what distance do you paper tune?
I start by paper tuning.
Okay.
That is like the basic bare minimum.
Yep.
If we talk about tuning, I say like, here we are paper tunes like zoomed out times like times 10. But I do start by paper tuning and then I move on from there. I don't really care what distance I do it at because I'm going to do three steps beyond that minimum every single time usually. Okay. But 3 feet, 6 feet, 5 yards, 7 yards, I don't really care. Like that is not what my focus is on. I just do that to make sure it's like roughly close to go to the next step.
And you said for a bow hunter, your next step after paper tune would be broadhead tune?
Well, one in between. I would torque tune.
Okay, that was so that was going to be my next question for you.
Okay.
Torque tuning. Why does nobody in my space talk about torque tuning?
I don't know, but they should be. And it's probably more important on a hunting bow because like on a target bow.
I get this is one of my pet peeves, to be honest, because I've heard so many professional archers say, oh, yeah, I'm a bow hunter. I torque tune the shit. I super tune my target bow because that's what matters. My hunting bow, I just kind of throw it together. And I'm like, wait, there's a life going to end at the end of your hunting bow.
Yeah.
So if one of them matters, it's a living, breathing animal, not a piece of paper. But I get what
where
they're saying, but that one's
where they're coming from is like trying to hit something this size.
Sure,
versus
I get it.
The,
yeah.
It's, I do things like that too, not torque tuning. That's not the step I skip, but there are things that I'm more critical on the target bow, but on a hunting bow, I could put all the effort in or the amount I put in and I cannot see a physical difference in the grouping.
Okay.
So like, that's why, and we know that, so we know what corners we can cut and get away with it.
Yep.
When you add in the level of perfection of a 30-inch front bar and an 8-power lens and a clarifier and all these other factors, those little tiny things you can measure show up more on a target bow. That's what that yeah. They're not actually saying, I'm just going to half-ass my hunting bow. We just know what we can get away with when we can. But how many times bow hunting are you like on your knees, leaned around a tree, like bent backwards, doing something weird? Anytime that you are different than just standing up and doing whatever, you're putting different torque into your bow.
Mm-hmm.
Period. Like that's a fact. And so torque tuning is probably more critical on a hunting bow because there's a more real chance that you are going to shoot with some sort of torque induced more than a target bow.
Right.
And let me just say torque has got a really negative connotation in archery. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, you can't torque the bow. Bullshit. Everybody torques the bow. As long as your torque is consistent, mm-hmm. it's fine. So essentially what's cool about torque tuning is it allows you to torque the bow inconsistent, but still hit the same. Mm-hmm. So it is free forgiveness. It is like instant, you can suck and still hit the middle. And if I told you like, that's the kind of tuning that you could, what you could get out of that kind of tuning, why would you not do it? Like it's so quick and easy. And even if it's not perfect, if your group was wider than the screen right now, and I get you to where now it's here in real time, that's still going to improve your misses by that much more. So like, just right. do it. It takes 10 minutes, you know, it's not that hard.
Yeah. No, I like that one. And this has been a new one for me. Cause it's like, why I never hear anybody in my space talk about torque tuning. You know?
Even on the target side, there's a lot of people who don't understand it. When Tate and I started dating, I torque tuned once and he was like, what kind of witchcraft crap is that? Like, what are you doing? And he's like, my bow will do that. And I was like, well, try it. And he literally almost missed the whole target on both sides. He's like, what is happening? And so he torque tuned his bow. And by the end of it, he's like, how did I never do that? Like, why? Like, I thought that was a load of crap, you know, but he'd never tried it. And sometimes you get lucky and you test it and it's just already good. And people are like, oh, it's a load of crap. Mine's already fine. No, you just got lucky and you landed in the spot that it's okay. But I've got videos out there and stuff teaching people how to do that. I'm sure there's other ones all over the internet. But like, not a hard thing to do. It's just moving your rest forward and back or moving your sight in and out. Hard part is like hunting, I don't want to move my sight out because I want it close to get all the yardage. And then unfortunately, a lot of the companies are not designing hunting rests with much forward to back movement. And so
or none, like the one I've
Yeah, or none. Yeah. And so it's kind of hard. Like when people are like, oh, well, why'd you pick this rest or why'd you whatever? Like I appreciate the ones that actually build the stuff around the tuning and making it better and whatnot, mm-hmm. because when ones just have like, oh, there's a fixed spot, I'm like, that company clearly doesn't understand torque tuning or the importance of torque tuning. So your equipment can make it easier or more difficult. Don't get me wrong, but if you have equipment that allows for it, it's very quick and easy.
Yeah. And maybe for a lot of bow hunters, if you're shooting, you know, a whitetail out of a tree stand and max distance that you can even see is 30 yards, maybe it matters mm-hmm. a little less, but for a guy that's going to take that bull I just shot in Arizona was 66 yards. I would, and I was shooting uphill, ever so slightly, but yeah, torque for sure. It's gotta be important. So even admittedly myself, that's like on my to-do list of something I really want to dive into.
At 20 yards, like in seminars, cause I've done that a lot this fall. I've had people torque their bow at 20 yards, hunting bows and target bows. Cause people will bring both to the seminars and they will miss all of the Vegas scoring rings left and right.
So maybe
even at 20, it's huge. It means it's only worse further. So like, it makes a massive difference.
I'm a believer. I'll trust it. Okay. Here's one for you, and then I'll cut you loose because I know I have another one. When do you stop tuning and just shoot?
The hunting bow.
Do you know?
Let me answer hunting first.
Do you know what I'm
saying? I know exactly what you mean. Mm-hmm. I have an answer, but let me give you the hunting bow one first. Okay. So I paper tuned, I torque tuned, then I run back to the paper because torque tuning will change your paper tune. So then I just check it, I get it good. Then the last step of that is I broadhead tuned. And so I'm essentially moving my rest. It's kind of like bear shaft tuning if you've done that with target stuff, but I'm getting my broadheads and my field tips to hit together at all distances. And yes, I've done that with field tips, like out to 100 yards, or not field tips, with fixed blades. Sorry. A lot of people are like, well, yeah, it's easy with mechanicals. You can't do that with fixed blades. Yes, you can if you know what you're doing. Also, for that to work, your aero spine has to be correct. So there's this weird thing that I recently learned that like a lot of shops back east are less than ideal, and they order like 300 spine arrows and just give everyone a 300 spine arrow. Mm-hmm. Like if that's the case, you probably can't do this, right? But it also, if you're shooting 20 yards out of a tree stand and that's it, it doesn't matter as much anyway. I live on the West Coast, Western hunting. So like we do shoot distance and it does matter.
Yeah.
But I will get my broadheads and my field tips to hit together across all distances. And from a forgiveness standpoint, people are like, well, how can you say you tune for all this forgiveness on target and then you do that hunting? Because if your broadhead can fly as true and clear and consistent and clean as a field tip across all distances, then that is going to give you the most forgiveness. Like if it's planing, catching, drag, all the things, that's only going to make it underperform. So if I can get clean enough arrow flight with a broadhead that it can impact the same as a field tip across all distances, it's instantly going to be more forgiving. So on a hunting bow, as soon as it's broadhead tuned, they hit together. Awesome. I sight in, I'm done. Like that's it. I do not do that. So I can, it's convenient that then I can shoot my field tips and know that it's impacted the same to check stuff or whatever, but that's not why I do it. I do it because of the forgiveness and consistency arrow flight standpoint. Now on the target side, the answer to that is I never quit.
Yeah.
But it's because it's my job. Sure. But let me give you the why. Like if this wasn't my job, there'd be a quitting point. But here's what I do. So I shoot the AE Freak Show QD rest. So there's a little body that stays on the rest and then like a little, and then I can pull the rest bodies off. So let's say I have a bow and my indoor bow right now for 27s and it's set up, it's good to go. I have something built that I can take to every tournament. When I get home, I can take rest body number one off and put rest body number two on. And then I can play with all that, move everything around, try to get the tune better. And if I land it better, guess what? That becomes my new primary. Mm-hmm. If I don't, I take it off and throw the other one on and go to the tournament. So a lot of the times I'm always using my spare time to group tune, which is tuning for forgiveness, essentially. To learn and like test different products. A lot of people don't realize this. I do a lot of product testing for different companies. So a lot of times when I come home, it's like I'm shooting and testing stuff that I'm not going to go shoot the next weekend, but it has to be done. And so, you know, I'm tinkering with that stuff as well, but I don't continuously tinker with the current setup that I'm going to be shooting, if that makes sense, because of the equipment that I've chosen. I can tinker with other equipment that doesn't screw up my current setup. And no, it's not a whole new bow, right? Like that's a lot of work. I just throw a different rest body on and I can move my rest all around and not screw anything up.
Yeah.
So the reason I can keep tinkering is that when I didn't have that, the answer to the question was just when I got my bow more forgiving that like I would make bad shots and they still hit the like the bad ones that I go, oh, and you're like, oh, I wish that'd be there. And they used to miss by 1 or 2 inches and all of a sudden those are hitting the dot. Like awesome. That's the forgiveness I'm looking for. And that's when I would be done.
Yeah.
And every season, like for the first while, I usually do that two rest thing and I keep working on it. And usually within about a month, month and a half, I'll land something where I'm like, I don't think it could get any better than that. Like then I'm done. Then I just go test other products or do whatever other things I'm supposed to be doing. But it's a different level when it's your job. Like, and that's where when people say, oh, I don't have to do that on the hunting bow, I wouldn't do that on my target bow if it wasn't how I made a living either. And it would probably be just as good. The difference is I might pick up one more X than what I would have. And that's the difference between winning and losing.
Right.
If it wasn't my job, do I really care? Like, no, I don't.
Yeah.
So
the foundation of the reason I asked that question is because I think I say this admittedly, this is me. I'm always chasing like the next thing. Like, what is the next thing that's going to make me a little bit better? Right. And it usually doesn't pan out, but I'm chasing like, oh, will this draw length adjustment matter? Will this extra weight on the front bar or two extra weights on the back bar or the angle of the back bar? You know, what's the thing that's going to help me next? When in reality, I think I would behoove me to set it, tune it, and shoot it.
For a lot of the people, yeah. Yes. Like that would be true. And yeah, a lot of people, it's like you said, it's the same thing as buying new equipment. It's like they're constantly like, but if I do this, I'll get so much better. Yeah. Like a lot of the times, and I use this joke, but it's like I could pick up somebody else's bow and shoot it and shoot almost just as good. Right. Bodie Turner picked up a Genesis bow last year and shot a 327X. So like what's hard for people to understand is the people who are good because their form is consistent. First off, that's not that hard to do. Most everyone's form is consistent, but their form is consistent and their mind is where it needs to be.
Yep.
Like they are a good archer, period, in here and physically. So we can kind of shoot anything and it doesn't really matter. Once you have that confidence in yourself, it makes all the other stuff a little bit easier to choke down, right? But you know, until you understand that and have that, everyone's always chasing the next thing. And it's like, that's not gonna make you great. Yeah. Like there's other things that matter more.
You brought up spine on your arrow. Can I ask you a quick question about straightness and always. Spine?
Yep.
So straightness, I hear a lot of talk about straightness in the bow hunting world, right? I myself have talked a lot about it, you know, buy the straightest, most consistent arrows, cut them from both ends, align your broadheads, the whole thing. But in reality, I think spine is probably the more important thing. And then
it is
tuning. Yeah. Right. So tuning individual arrows, whether you're knock tuning them and paper tuning them and then broadhead tuning them, do you hold that same? How much does straightness matter?
Straightness is way, way less important than spine.
Right.
What you'll find with straightness is it's not going to make it group differently, but it might just group a little bit wider. So like here's the problem. And like, let's say anything three thou straightness or better. So there's 3 thou, 1 thou, like those are pretty common in the bow hunting world. Most people, especially with the hunting setup, are not good enough that they will ever, if I gave them one dozen of one with no labels and a dozen of another, their groups would probably look the same. Because the standard is so much better than us when you put the human error in, you really don't notice that as much. Now, spine consistency matters so much more because when an arrow is a different spine, it is going to impact a different spot. Mm-hmm. And so through our testing, we have one of those gauges where you like set it at 28 inches, you hang the weight from the arrow, it tests the spine. And when I go through my arrow building process, which is essentially weeding out the dud process is how I'd put that. The thing I'm most critical on is spine. Like if there are arrows and like, let's say I shoot a 400 spine and most are coming in around 412 and I've got like a 415 and a 408, like that's no bad, but ones at like 425 all of a sudden or 430, like garbage. No, like nothing that you do to that arrow is going to make it react like the other arrows. And so really spine is one of the most critical things when we're building and testing.
Yeah. And I don't think, from a bow hunter's perspective, I don't think a lot of us put a lot of time and effort into building a dozen arrows that the spine is consistent, that it's coming out of the bow the exact same way, so that when you are practicing your...
If you knock tune, that's going to help eliminate a lot of that, like even for the ones that are inconsistent. Mm-hmm. If you can knock tune them and get them to, you know, all tear the same coming out of the bow, then that's half the battle right there. So like as a bare minimum from a true real bow hunting standpoint, that's what I use the paper more for. And I absolutely do that on hunting and target arrows. Now, I will say this is where it's probably more important from the bow hunting community. And it's like, how do they know what is best, right? Because you just have all these sponsored people everywhere saying, what I shoot is the best. Okay, well, I can tell you that through the arrow build process that we do, you can see which one's the best because it's like, okay, I started with a dozen and I ended with 3, or I started with a dozen and I ended with 11. Like, which company is better, right? Or which group of arrows is better. And so the more you know and the more you learn, it makes it easier to just be like, okay, I want to buy the better arrows in the first place. So I know that it's not as important that I do this kind of stuff. So that's half the battle. But I will say one thing that's important too, like, and Tate and I do it differently, but same outcome. You should always, always square your arrows on the back for target especially, but for bow hunting, broadhead in, the front end matters a lot, mm-hmm. and how that stuff fits. So I know you said like Tate dry fits all his stuff. So he puts it in, spins everything before it's glued in, lines everything up and goes, okay, this broadhead is now matched with this arrow. Here's the line. He glues it in like that. I'm lazy. I don't do that. But what I do is I have a pile of broadheads, a pile of arrows, and I put them on and I spin them. And like, I can take a broadhead and put that same broadhead on four different arrows and it will feel four different spins. So when I go to do that, it's like, oh, nope, not good enough, not good enough. Oh, that one's great. Okay. Yeah. There's an arrow I would shoot, and you can mix and match. And like that broadhead might spin like crap on arrow two, but you put it on arrow four and it's yep. the best combination ever. So you should always check that too. Like if people aren't, my way is the quick, easy, lazy way of doing that. And as a bare minimum, you should be doing that anytime that you start assembling broadheads and arrows, like just to check that. You can feel it in your hand. Like some of them, it's like the chatter is just unreal. That's, put the broadhead on another arrow and it spins like glass.
Yeah, that's how I do mine. And then I go through.
That will hit different.
Yeah, then I go through and label them. So I write the number on the broadhead, the number on the arrow. And like if I'm yes. flying somewhere, then I'll pair that broadhead with that arrow because I yeah. spun it in my hand. It was true.
Another thing to do, everyone should number their arrows. Yeah. And if you do practice with your hunting bow, which I'm hoping people do, yeah. right? Yeah. You might just find your shooting and you're like, God, that hit left, but I don't think it should have. And you look and you're like, arrow number seven. And like 2 inches later you shoot and you're like, God, another left arrow. I swear I didn't shoot left. Arrow number seven. What you'll find is that you'll see something like that. And if you have them numbered and you pay attention, it'll be like, that one doesn't want to play with the group. If that happens, even if I've noctuned, I will then rotate a different vein up than what I landed on the noctune and start shooting and see if it wants to play with the group or if it got worse or if it moved to low or moved to right. And so that's kind of like a higher level. I actually do plotting with a plotting app and all this stuff that like really helps me fine tune it in. Bow hunters aren't going to do that. But at the bare minimum, if you just look at the arrow numbers and be like, oh, that one consistently is a standout flyer. Don't shoot it, trash it, or rotate a different vein up and see if you can get it to go in and play with the right. group. So that's always something worth watching, and it's an easy thing to do.
Gotcha. I'm going to hit you with one more. I'm sorry.
You're good. You're good. This is, if I had to put a fake face on for this, we might as well capitalize.
what's the best feel indicator for you when your bow is set up for it's right for you? Like what does that question?
The aim.
Aim?
Yeah.
And the is aim. That just how steady it sits?
Yep. Okay. Little movement, very little pin movement.
Is that bare bow? Is that full bow setup?
Full bow setup.
Got you.
Yeah. Can I just, I'm going to bash on the hunting industry here real quick. Please. And it's only because I love them and I care about them. The number of people that shoot a bow and they're like, oh, is it dead in my hand? I'm like, who effing cares? Like that has absolutely zero to do with how the bow shoots, performs, aims, groups, like nothing, speed, nothing. Mm-hmm. And so it's funny because that has become such this huge metric of measure. They take a bare bow with nothing on it, shoot them, and want to pick the one with the less hand shock. Mm-hmm. Do you know how much hand shock? Our target bows are like shooting a freaking tuning fork. It's like, yeah. And we shoot hundreds of arrows. So it's not like a, oh, it's going to hurt me standpoint. Like, I don't know who the heck created that as a metric to buy a hunting bow, but it's the dumbest metric I've ever seen in my life. What you should be looking at is, does this hand grip feel good to me? Mm-hmm. Does my hand naturally want to fit in this grip? Because if you like have a bow and you hate the hand grip and you fight it all the time, that's going to be a problem. Does the hand grip feel good to you? How's the draw cycle? You have to draw that bow every single time. Is it going to hurt your shoulder or does it help your shoulder, right? Is it going to hurt another part of your body or help? That should be important. Back wall and let off. Usually if you know what you're doing, you can adjust that on a hunting bow, but like, how does that feel to you? And then how does it aim? Does it feel like it has a stable platform, right? Is the bow wanting to move everywhere on you? Or does it feel like the bow is wanting to be still and you are moving the bow? Those are two different things. I care about every single thing that is going to change where my arrow lands downrange. Mm-hmm. And that's how I pick that. But I don't give a shit about how it feels after I shoot because it doesn't matter at all.
Yeah. No, I get it. Yeah. I totally understand. I mean, noise is one fact. I totally know what you're saying though.
Yeah. But here's the problem. Mm-hmm. When you put all of the accessories and all of the things on the bow, then they're all pretty much the same anyway. Mm-hmm. So most of the testing, that's what I was going to add. I'm glad you just said that. Most of the testing is done bare bow. Well, hello, it's going to be completely different and way quieter. A lot of the sound too, funny enough, comes from accessories. Right. And so people will go, oh, this is quiet. And then depending on the accessories you pick, the bow could get louder or could get quieter depending. Mm-hmm. And so if you pick decent accessories and you actually check your screws and make sure everything's tight, by the time you put everything on the bow, almost every single bow on the market right now is going to be about the same.
Yeah.
Like a difference that you truly can't really tell. Go shoot a 20-year-old bow, and if you don't have a wrist sling, it's like, and it just like flies out of your hand. Like the forward momentum toward the target or the animal was like, it would blow someone's mind who just started bow hunting nowadays. And they're like in their feeling, you know, the shock. I just want to be like, dude, if they shot a 20-year-old bow, they'd be like, yeah, I realize I'm being ridiculous now. Yeah. We're like, yeah, we killed shit back then too. You know, like it happened. Absolutely. So yeah, I wish that bow hunters would use metrics that matter. Like I want to see them shoot the bow better. Right.
Yeah.
Like that's how I want them to choose what is most comfortable for them and their bodies. What are they going to perform the best with?
Yeah, because in reality, that is all that matters is where your point of impact. That's it. Yeah, it's everything. Yeah.
And I think sound matters. Don't get me wrong. Like I test different vanes to make it quieter and I'll throw rubber stuff on my bow to quiet it down. Yeah, of course, all that matters. Mm-hmm. But that's not how I'm choosing what bow I'm going to shoot. Yeah. I can play with all of that.
Yeah, I've been an advocate. This kind of fits in the same realm as like a heavy bow versus a light bow. And I talk to people all the time. They're like, man, I want the lightest bow possible. I'm going in the back country and I'm going in there at 15 miles and I just want a super light bow. And I'm like, I get that and I understand it for the packing purposes, but I know how hard those moments are to actually get within range of a target animal that you've scouted and dreamed about your whole life. Like, wouldn't you trade anything pretty much for that shot to execute and be accurate? You would. You'd pack
and aim.
You'd pack a heavy bow, which is, I've always been an advocate. Like, if your hunting bow is super heavy, who gives a shit if it hits behind the pin?
I think I shoot 10, 11 ounces on my front bar and like 15 ounces on my back bar. My hunting bow.
Not that bad, but I'm like 4 and 9 maybe.
Yeah, but that's still more than most hunters. And like people will pick my hunting bow up and go, holy shit. And I'm hunting with a Virtue. So like it's 3.7 pounds, sub 4 pound bow. So light, but it feels heavy once everything's on it. And I'm like, yeah, I didn't buy it because it was a light bow. Like I liked the draw cycle and I liked how it grouped and the grip and all the things. But like I do not aim a bow well. I laughed earlier when you said that because I do not aim a bow good. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I know moment of truth. If I take that bow and I run hardly any weight, it is moving all over around the animal. Like I want it, the pin to sit kind of in the area that I want to shoot. And so many bow hunters, rightfully so, I get it, but like punch the trigger. They don't shoot a lot. They don't aim that good. And if your pin is moving around too much, I would rather have you punch when it's in the right place than have you execute back tension if you aim in like a 3 foot group, right? But if you aim in a couple inch group, like right around where you need to be, then you can execute better shots. Like the anticipation isn't there. And so I really care more about, again, how it aims, because when it aims better, then I can execute it better. And when I execute it better, I always impact better. And so everything I do is more from an actual performance standpoint on target and hunting. And I'll do anything weird out of the ordinary. I'll try anything. Like I'm known for that. And if it works, I'll run it. And if it doesn't, I won't. But I just think it's way easier to be open-minded, you know, and I would rather pack a bow that weighs a pound more, but I make a perfect shot when it matters than like cut a pound and not.
That's me. Totally get it. Well, thanks, Paige. I really appreciate your time. I've been a fan for a while and I was excited to get a chance to talk to you today. You know, last night I was talking to my kids and I said, yeah, I got a podcast tomorrow and I'm, you know, get a chance to talk to Paige Pierce. And I was telling them who you are. And I said, you know, she might be a future Olympian. So, and they
that
were
is
so
crazy.
Yeah, that is crazy, but it's so cool. Right. You know, so I'm pulling for you and rooting for you. And
thank you.
Know, I hope that comes to fruition. And they thought that was,
you still got a few years won't even kick off till like end of 27.
I know. I totally get it, but they were excited about it. And I got to thinking about it. I thought, man, how cool. And then my middle kid was like, man, you get a chance to talk to some really cool people. So,
that is cool. No, yeah. I really appreciate you having me on. Like, it's neat to do. I do target stuff all the time. Yep. So anytime I can come talk some hunting side of stuff, I appreciate that. Like I said, that's my true love and passion. Mm-hmm. And if I could do that, that's what I'd pick every time. So anytime I can do anything to like help bow hunters, I think that's awesome because I feel like they don't have as many resources as the target side does. Right. So
I agree.
I appreciate it.
Well, thanks, Paige. I'll cut you loose. Thanks again and good luck.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. Yep. Appreciate it.